Thank you for coming this evening. We didn't exactly know what to title this class, so we called it What is Vedic Astrology? It's more of an appreciation of Vedic astrology. We'll be discussing, you know, how Vedic astrology works, different branches of Vedic astrology, uses of Vedic astrology with examples, how it relates to Vaishnava philosophy, what you won't learn. You won't learn how to draw a chart. You won't get any practical ability in reading a chart because, in other words, you won't be an astrologer because it takes a little bit more than a couple of hours to become an astrologer. It takes years before you can become competent to read a horoscope. Now, the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all Vedic literatures. All Vedic knowledge is summarized concisely in the Gita. That's why it is glorified in all the Vedas. With Krishna, it's called the Gita Upanishad because he concisely spoke all Vedic knowledge there. The Gita covers five topics: God, the soul, time, the time factor, the material energy, and karma. So, we mostly in our classes here we discuss about God, so I don't think I have to go into a lot of detail about who Krishna is and all these different things. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he controls everything, he is a controller, he created everything, does everything, etc., etc. Jiva, that's us. We are the associate, we are plenary, not plenary, we are particles of the Supreme. We are the infinitesimal sparks of the Supreme. And there are two types of jivas, those who are eternally perfect, nitya siddhas, who are in the spiritual world, and then there are those others, such as us, by our very bad choices, we came to the material world, which is prakriti. The number four element is the prakriti, the material world, the material energy. And there's time. Actually, it is the time factor which creates the material world. The time factor is God himself, is Krishna himself, kalo sniyaham. And it is by the time factor which separates the material world from the spiritual world. And in our sojourn in the material world, the living entities, by their actions, they develop reactions, karma. So this is the five topics which are there. The first four topics, God, the jiva, time factor, and prakriti, these are eternal. But karma is not eternal. So Krishna, Krishna is the super soul of the material world. It's like in our body, there's the Atman and the Paramatma. In the garbha, when Lord Krishna enters into Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, into each universe, there's also the Atma, which is Lord Brahma, and there is the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, who is seated along with Lord Brahma. So there is, the material world appears to be dead, but it is activated by God. Krishna completely is in control. Everything, to us it appears inert and unconscious. That's because we're in Maya. That's what Maya means. It's not we see things distinct or separated from Krishna. But actually everything is connected to Krishna. So if we had the eyes to see, if we had the ability, we could see that at every moment, everything around us is communicating with us. Krishna is trying to communicate with us. Krishna, it describes in the Shastras that Krishna, first he tries to communicate to the Paramatma, If we learn how to control the mind, then we can hear the Paramatma inside. Those who has controlled the mind, then the Paramatma has already been achieved. But most people, they're a little bit too busy. They're not looking inward. So then Krishna tries to communicate externally. The questions can be asked later. There will be a question and answer session later. So Krishna tries to communicate externally. You know, one time, I'll give you an example. When Srila Prabhupada wanted he wanted to publish the Krishna book, he didn't have any money. So he asked my older god brother Shyama Sundar to ask George Harrison to publish the book, to pay for the publishing. Now, Shyama Sundar he cringed at the thought because he had never asked George Harrison for 1 cent before. And George Harrison he was always afraid that people would try to use him, like he had bad experiences with other people. He was always waiting for when is it going to come, when they're going to start asking me for money type of thing. You know, so Shyama Sundar never, ever wanted to ask him for anything, for any money. So now Srila Prabhupada put on him to ask George Harrison to pay for the publishing of the Krishna book. So Shyama Sundar was trying to figure out how he could ask this question, you know, and not blow his relationship with George Harrison. So one day they were at George Harrison's home, and they were having dinner. And then Shyama Sundar asked him the fatal question that Prabhupada wanted the Krishna book published. It was going to cost something like £19,000 or something like that. So then he said, George Harrison got this really bad look in his face, right? And I said, okay, here it comes. They're asking me for money. And all of a sudden, he had this really serious look in his face, and all of a sudden there was like a thunderstorm just started. It was a clap of lightning, and all the lights went out. All the lights went out. And it was out for some time. And then, after some time, you know, the lights came back on. And George Harrison had this smile on his face. And he was pulling out his checkbook. He says, how much was that? And Shyama Sundar was amazed. He was shocked. Like, you know, before George Harrison had this real look of, uh-oh. on this, and then he had a smile on his face. He's writing a check. And so Shyama Sundar asked him, why are you doing it? He was curious, you know. He said, well, when you asked me that question, I was thought for sure that, you know, I was going to be taken for a ride, but I prayed in my heart to Krishna to give me a sign. To give me a sign. And sure enough, Krishna gave me. I mean, out of the clear sky, that all of a sudden there's a lightning storm, bolts of lightning, the power's knocked out. So to him, that was Krishna's communicating with him. These are called omens, nimitta. It's a whole system of omens. So actually, Vedic astrology is actually a branch. It's subsumed in a much greater, the studying of omens, of all everything around you. Everything around you is talking to you, if you can understand. If you can understand that language. It's like, my brother happens to be a mechanic. So when I open the hood of my car, I just see like some wires and hoses. But my brother, he sees a whole different story. He's listening. He can hear, you know, what the sound it means. You know, the valve is definitely wrong. You know, he can immediately diagnose the whole problem just by, you know, hearing something. But to me, or anybody else probably in the room, they don't see anything. They just see hoses and wires. But he has the eyes to see. So you can be trained. There are texts which explain how to understand what is going around you. And so this is called you could say the category is called Samhita, just a collection of these texts, you know, being able to read omens. An example, there was this very learned astrologer. He was the prince of Cochin, which is in South India, Kochi. So he was vastly learned. And he had many students who were his many astrologers who were his students. And so one day, a couple, parents, they came to, they wanted to get their daughter married. They were very, very wealthy parents, and so they wanted to bring, they were checking out, comparing her horoscope with the candidate, likely candidate for marriage, and seeing if it worked. So they went to all the big astrologers in the land, and they all said this is great, a great match. But then they came to the Prince of Cochin, where he would get the finally, his stamp of approval was necessary. So he didn't even look at it. He said, show it to my students. So the students studied the horoscopes for an hour or so, and they said, it was a great match. Terrific match. So then the Prince of Cochin said, give it to me. He took it in his hands. After about 15 seconds, he said, this will never work. And they gave it back to them. And the parents were shocked that this, everybody else said it would work, and he said it's not going to work. And his students were too shocked, they didn't even know what to say. They didn't even know what to ask him. They were just dumbfounded. But then, because they had such a great respect for the Prince of Cochin, the parents agreed, and they canceled the marriage plans. A few months later, they came back to the Prince of Cochin. They were paying their obeisances. They were, you saved us from a great calamity, you know, terrible things. You know, our daughter would have been a widow at a young age because the man that she was to marry had been killed in an accident. So she'd been married to him, then she would have been a widow. Especially in those days, the women didn't get remarried. So then she'd be stuck, young girl, widow, no possibility of getting remarried. So the parents were greatly relieved by this. So at this time, the students of the prince, they had the courage to ask him the questions. What is it that you could see in 15 seconds that we couldn't see after studying for a couple of hours? And everybody else who studied it also. How you could see just a few seconds. And he said, I didn't see anything. When they handed me the horoscope, at that moment, I heard the sound of a man screaming. That was a very bad omen. So immediately I said, he said, an astrologer has to keep his eyes and ears open because everything is telling you something. It's not just that you read little symbols on a piece of paper. So, there's many branches of this. There's many, just as we speak about the three modes of material nature, dividing everything into, like plants in the mode of goodness, food in the mode of goodness, food in the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, animals, trees, everything is divided into three modes. There's also divination, which is all about divination, finding out the will of the divine, of God, is also divided into three modes. There's divination in the mode of goodness, divination in the mode of passion and ignorance. Because there's, for example, even today in present-day Africa, but to speak of in ancient Rome and Greece and Babylon, there were some methods of divination which are in the mode of passion. For example, they would to try to find out what God is saying, they would sacrifice animals and then read their entrails, see what the livers look like, and they could then predict what the future would be. In fact, there was a famous case in the Second Greek-Persian War in 479 BC. When the Persian army was stranded in Greece, they had 400,000 soldiers stranded in Greece, and they're about to fight the Battle of Plataea. The Oracle of Delphi had been consulted, and the Oracle said that the army which attacked first would lose. So nobody wanted to do anything. They were just like a standoff because they knew that whoever started attacking would lose. But unfortunately for the Persians, they were like 1,500 miles away from home, so they just couldn't stay there. They had to do something. The Greeks were at home; they could stay as long as they want. They didn't have to do anything because they were in their home turf. But the Persians, they were in the middle of a problem, so they started fighting. At this time, the Greek general who was in charge, Pausanias, the Spartan, he began sacrificing bulls and then reading the entrails to see when is the proper time to counterattack. And finally, when he got the proper sign, then he counterattacked it and he slaughtered 400,000 Persians. That was the end of the war, the beginning of the next war. It didn't stop there, you know. It went on for another 150 years. But that was the end of that one and the starting of the next one. So that's an example of divination, the mode of passion, the killing of animals, seeing what the body parts told. Or the mode of ignorance would be like necromancy. The word mancy, mantic, this has to do with anything of a divinatory nature. So necromancy is trying to determine through divination through dead bodies, raising the spirits of the dead, which is mentioned in the Bible, and which is, you know, the Catholic Church under Thomas Aquinas and Albertus Magnus, who is his guru. They actually were in favor of astrology as long as persons didn't use black arts to enhance their predictive power, like necromancy. So these are so in the three modes. So there's also, in the mode of goodness, there would be things like, you know, studying the flight of birds. If you were going someplace and the birds flew some direction, that meant something. Or, in example, in Africa, even today, like in West Africa, what they'd do is they make, from palm leaves, they make little dozens of symbolic cards, sort of like you would have tarot cards, but the small size, different symbols, all have a specific meaning. Then they find a spider hole where a large spider lives, and they very carefully distribute the cards around the spider hole, and they put a basket over the hole and or a bowl, and they start beating it, making a big racket, till the spider comes out and he starts, you know, trying to get out, and he kicks everything around. And then later when he goes back in the hole, they lift it up and they start reading how he's rearranged all the cards, what it actually means. Well, there's so many different systems of divination. Tarot, the I Ching, which is often found in the Vedas, like in Ramayana or Mahabharata, when your body starts to twitch. You ever had that experience? Your body starts to twitch. And so depending upon which half of your body, it means different things. For example, for females, if it's happening on the left side of the body, it has one meaning. For a male, if it's happening on the right side of the body, it has a different meaning. Some things would be the same no matter what, but usually it's the opposite. For males, it's auspicious on the right side. For females, on the left side. So like if all of a sudden your eye starts twitching or there's books which describe what's the meaning of each different part of your body twitching. I can't remember which one it is now. I think it's either your right leg, your right knee, or your left. One of them means that people are talking about you and they're probably not saying good things. You know, things like that, or you're going to meet somebody, or your money will come, or there's a whole lexicon of these things, or the animals. Of course, in the urban centers, because people were more living in a rural environment, so they would often base a lot of omens based upon animals. But you're not going to see many animals in the city except for dogs and rats and crows and things like that. But they'd have many animals. Like if they're going on a journey, all of a sudden animals cross from one side to the other side. If it's from one direction to the other direction, that's considered good. The opposite direction is considered bad. Or anybody's familiar with the Mahabharata. At one point in time, the Pandavas by intrigue of the Kauravas, they were sent to their deaths by walking into the house of lac, which is just it was a building, but it was all made of flammable materials that would just go up like that. So I think it was either Nakula or Sahadev, one or the other. He was a master at reading omens. So as soon as he walks into the building, there's a lizard, a little lizard, they call it tick-tick, because that's the sound it makes. So from a certain direction, he made a certain number of ticks, and that meant that the building was going to be burned up. But he didn't tell anybody, because he had mastered the science, but his vow was that he would never say anything unless somebody asked him. And since somebody asked him, he didn't say anything. It's probably a good thing, wise move, because a lot of times people don't want to hear what you have to say anyway. like Cassandra. Anybody know who Cassandra was?
Greek.
Cassandra, who said?
Greek.
She was the daughter of King Priam and the sister of Hector and Paris. And she had been a faithful worshipper of the sun god, Apollo. And he was very happy with her worship. So one day he appeared. Sort of like when the sun god appeared with Draupadi, with Kunti, when he appeared in Kunti, he wanted to make his meeting with her auspicious. So he wanted to embrace her, and, you know, like the sun god wanted to give Kunti a child. So, but first when he came, first thing he did, he blessed her that everything she said would come true. First he blessed her, gave her the blessing of prophecy. And then he wanted to embrace her, have sexual intercourse with her, as a blessing to her. Because she had been worshipping him faithfully. She had been keeping, you know, he said, well, but she said, I'm a virgin. Well, excuse me, but I'm the one you were saving, you know, I'm here now. And she was insisting, you know, she was somehow or other, her brain wasn't working. So finally, he said, okay, just give me a kiss. At least one kiss. She thought about it. Okay. So she kissed him. And then he said, you are so foolish. I'm here. You worshiped me for so long. Now I came and you didn't want to. Okay. You will be able to see the future. But now that I've kissed you, no one will believe a word you say. And then she saw the whole devastation. She saw the whole disaster of the Trojan War. She saw everything that would happen. And she tried to warn everybody, but nobody believed her. A word that she said. She saw her own death, her own captivity. So that's the Cassandra effect. That you can see everything that's happening, but nobody believes you. So sometimes it's best not to say anything. So, though there's this system of natural divination just from seeing everything around you, there are also formalized systems. A formalized system would be something like the I Ching. Everybody's heard of the I Ching, which is used in China. There's hexagrams, or there's the tarot. But the most, you know, the most exact, the most precise, the most elaborate methodology is that of astrology. Very elaborate system of divination, much more so than any other type, and more has more versatility, can be applied to many subjects, you know, whereas, you know, for example, like palmistry. Everybody heard of palmistry? Body, you can read bodies, you can even read what somebody's body is like. So palmistry is a branch of that. But palmistry, you can only see that individual person's future. But through astrology, you could see the future of nations. Like that, you know. Of course, physiognomy and face reading, which is, it's called Samudrika Shastra. It's based actually upon Samudra Raj, who is the king of the ocean. He was observing the body of Lakshmi Narayan as they were on Anantasesha. And he used that as the standard of perfection. Any deviation from that is what body reading was based upon. So in this day and age of plastic surgery, face reading is not very effective. Right? You know, they had their teeth straightened, whitened, you know, the fangs were removed. You know. Or sometimes people look worse than they started out with. They should have just, you know, I saw some websites that where, you know, when plastic surgery goes wrong, you know, like alien encounters, you know. So that's a little bit tricky. You wouldn't want to, you couldn't really, unless you know the person's medical records, you couldn't really trust what you were seeing. But astrology is different than that. It's all because, we'll get into that. So first of all, we have to see, well, let's look a little bit about the Vedas. The Vedas, which are a body of knowledge, which literally just means knowledge, are divided. There's four Vedas, the Rig Veda, the Yajurveda, Krishna and Shukla, Yajurveda, the Samaveda, and Atharva Veda. And there's all the mantras together called the Samhita. Then there's the Brahmanas, which explain the Vedas, the Aranyakas, which give more esoteric knowledge, and the Upanishads, along with each Veda. That's the body of the Vedas. Then, the Vedas have what are called the Shad Vedangas, the six limbs of the Vedas. It says you have limbs, you have more than one, you have multiple limbs. The Vedas also have limbs. They would be Shiksha, Chanda, Nirukta, Vyakarana, Kalpana, and Jyotish, which is astrology. So Shiksha is how you learn how to pronounce the Vedic mantras. They have to be pronounced in a very precise, specific way. Otherwise, you don't get the effect. You can get the reverse effect. Just like when Twastri was trying to invoke a demon who would kill Indra, but he pronounced the mantra improperly, and he invoked a demon who would be killed by Indra instead, Vittasura. So it had to be pronounced properly. Then there's Chanda, which is the proper meter. It's like poetry, the proper meter, which is there. Then there is Nirukta, which is the definitions, the etymology of the word. And Vyakaran is the grammar. Then Kalpana is the various rituals which are there. And then Jyotish, which is astronomy and astrology. So the first two, Shiksha and Chanda, they teach you how to speak the Veda. The second two, Nirukta and Vyakaran, they teach you the meaning of the Veda. And the third two, Kalpana and Jyotish, teach you how to use the Vedas, how to use it in life. So that means that astrology is a limb of the Veda, which is utilized then for serving the purpose of the Vedas. The purpose of the Vedas is to bring the soul who is lost in the material energy back to Godhead. Because it's a formal way of communicating, of God communicating with the living entity through the system. So, therefore, astrology is it's a divine cryptogram. Anybody know what a cryptogram is?
Yeah.
Yes, it's a cryptogram. It's a divine cryptogram in which Krishna communicates to us in a very subtle way, but in a very full of very deep meanings, but it has to be decoded. When you read a horoscope, it's not quite the same. In fact, it's opposite of reading a newspaper or a book. Every symbol has multiple layers of meanings. I mean, whole books have been written about each symbol. For example, each sign of the zodiac, whole books have been written on that. Each planet, whole books have been written on each planet, each house. Like that. So it's very deep meanings are there. But it reveals everything. It's a language. that because it is a divine cryptogram, it's able, and it is a language, it's able to cover every subject, either profane or divine. It's like the English language, it can be used to describe, you know, in the ordinary newspapers, right? Or any ordinary written material, or it can be very transcendental knowledge. It can describe anything. So in the same way, astrology or any other divinatory system can describe any subject. But specifically astrology, because of the complexity of it, is more precise and it can be more in depth than other systems of divination. But astrology does not do anything. Astrology does not cause anything to happen. You always have to remember, astrology does not cause anything. It's only, it's like if you got a letter, like in England is at war in Afghanistan, right? They have troops over there. So suppose you get a letter from the War Department saying that your son was killed. Now, did the letter kill your son? It just described what happened. It didn't cause the event to take place. So people have this misunderstanding that the stars are controlling things. We'll discuss that tomorrow, about fate, free will, and the law of karma. But astrology doesn't cause anything to happen. It's simply a language which describes what is happening. But it doesn't cause it to happen. Just like there's a clock on the wall over here, right? So when the little hand is at the 5 and the big hand is at the 12, all of a sudden, you know, people come out of their office buildings and they head toward their cars and they create a big traffic jams. Is that somehow that the geometric relationship between the big hand and the little hand caused that to happen? No. Or a better example, when there's low pressure in the air, often rain comes, isn't it? You find that barometer, you know. So when there's low pressure, then there's rain. So you can measure that. You create a barometer, right? So then, when the needle on the barometer goes down, then rain takes place. Proves, you know, this, the needle going down causes it to rain. Is that right? So when the needle doesn't, we should, if it's not raining, then we should do some sort of puja to the barometer, asking it to go down, and then there'll be rain. No, that's not how it works, is it? The barometer doesn't cause rain, but you can tell if it's going to rain or not. But it doesn't cause the rain. It measures. It's a pointing device, but it doesn't cause it to rain. Nor does it cause it not to rain. It has nothing to do with rain, but it tells you if it's going to rain or not. That's what astrology is like. It doesn't cause anything to happen, but it tells you if it's going to happen. It's like when you see the little hand is on the 5 and the big hand is on the 12, you know there's going to be a traffic jam. But it didn't do anything. It's not the cause of the event. Now, astrology is most astrological texts, especially ancient texts, they're not, it was a secret knowledge, not given to everybody. Because first of all, before you could study astrology, you had to know Sanskrit. Right? Then after knowing Sanskrit, you had to then study mathematics. And after studying mathematics, you had to study astronomy. Then you could take up the study of astrology. And of course, the persons who were doing this, who were studying these subjects, they were Brahmanas, they were yogis. So not only they were very sharp from a material point of view, intellectually, they're also practicing sadhana, chanting of mantras, performing austerities. So just from a material, just from a intelligence point of view, it was the to study Sanskrit and all these different subjects meant only the top 5 percentile of the intelligentsia were studying the subject. Not that like today you can just buy a $300 program, you know, and if you have enough of an IQ that you can punch in the data, that, you know, now people think that they're astrologers. I had a client who thought that's the way it was. He didn't like the answers I was giving him. And I don't make the future. I'm just seeing the future. But he didn't like the answers I was giving him. So he thought, let me buy the program, the same program I was using. So he bought the program. And he had just gotten divorced from his wife. So he thought, well, these astrology programs, they have they do compatibilities on them, right? You just punch in one data, you punch in the other data, and do a compatibility study. So then he got this girl, and it was great compatibility. I heard about it all after the fact, you know. So so I said, oh, okay, and he got married to the girl, right? 8 months later, they're in divorce, process of getting divorced, and she turned out to be like the wife from hell, because this happened in India. Because then she started making all false claims about him, and she had him and his mother put on the Interpol wanted list so that he couldn't, you know, his passport was confiscated. All kinds of really, really nasty things. So that's what happens when you try to be your own astrologer if you don't know anything about it. Just by using programs, it's not going to work. That it's a bad mistake, very bad mistake to do things like that. You have to actually know how to read, how to use the program. But unfortunately, these softwares give the, all it does is give the position of the planets, but you have to actually know how to read them. It's like, you know, somebody can give you an ECG, but does that mean you know how to, you know, electroencephalograph for the brain? You have to know how to read them. It's because somebody prints it out for you. You have to know the science. So it was not for everybody. And it was also restricted to persons who were very firm believers in God. Not for atheists. It was a ban because there are reactions. There are reactions from misusing astrology. In the case of most of us, astrology is used to discover what our karma is, because we have karma. But it can be used also to read, to see the future of persons who don't have karma. It's just a language. But the reason I'm mentioning karma is, if you misuse astrology, then there are grave reactions. Parashara Rishi explains that for a person who misuses astrology, then after death, they go to Naraka, which is hell. And in their next life after that, they are born blind. The reason they're born blind is because I said astrology is, there's 6 limbs of the Vedas, right? So astrology is called the Veda Chakshu, the eye of the Veda. So that's why you're born blind, because you misused that vision, that limb. So it was a lot of restriction as to who could study astrology, because it was be like giving a weapon in somebody's hand. You have to, you know, people could very easily misuse it. So often they would study the horoscope of the student first to see if he was qualified. And there would a lot of high standards were there to be an astrologer. Because actually you're trying to understand the, and it's extremely complicated. If you see so many different things and trying to put them together, it really requires a lot of intuition, a lot of prayer, a lot of praying is involved. As one astrologer pointed out, that today, with the technological advances, they're making so many tools for the astrologer to use, like these softwares and different things like that. But what about the mind of the astrologer? What are they doing to enhance that? Because that's what, everything has to go through that filter, the consciousness of the astrologer. That's the ultimate tool. It has to go through the person's mind. And if his mind is not pure, if he hasn't been trained properly, then anything they say goes through that filter. And you'll get all kinds of unusual answers, or motivated answers, or wrong answers. And that's why these days, because of the lowered standards, using not the proper training, that there's a lot of bad predictions are made, a lot of bad answers come out. It doesn't come out so well because of the training. It's not so good. They just depend upon software. No sadhana, no... they're not following the traditional style of doing it. So, astrology has various branches. There's 6 main branches of astrology and several sub-branches. The main branches are Ganita, which is simply the mathematics involved. Mathematics, the calculations which are there. Then there's Gola, which is the astronomy. Spherical astronomy, be able to calculate the planetary positions. Now, as I said at the beginning, it is a form of divination, and divination was meant, it was based upon things that you could see, which you could perceive with your senses, either by seeing or by hearing, or some other sensory perception, you would make a, you were able to make a determination. So this means that things like the trans-Saturnian planets, which are beyond eyesight, can't be used in astrology. Neptune, Uranus, Pluto, you can't see them without a telescope. So those are not used in astrology. Of course, Western astrologers may use that, but then it goes against the... It created a serious problem in their axiomatic system. So we don't... Just because it's a planet, there's a distinction between the planet and the graha. In astrology, they're called grahas. Graha means a divinatory agent. Not all planets are grahas, and not all grahas are planets. Let me explain what I mean by that. Suppose you were going to start your journey. You're going to go on a business trip, right? And as you're going, you're in traditional India, you see a girl walking down the street with a bucket of milk, full bucket of milk. That means your business trip is going to be successful. But if the bucket of milk was, if the bucket was empty, it means your business trip would be a failure. Now, that bucket is not a planet. But it's a symptom about what happened. So, similarly, only certain planets have a divinatory significance, the ones which we can see. That would be Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Sun and Moon. And the ascendant is represented by the Earth. And then Rahu and Ketu are calculated from the nodes of the moon. They actually are invisible planets, but they are known from the position of the sun and moon. So that's one of the, that has to do with the astronomical part. Then for other branches of astrology, or Jataka, from the word Janma, birth horoscope, which is most people are aware of, the birth horoscope based upon the time you were born. The astrologer draws up your horoscope, and then they can predict so many things about you. You'd be surprised what a good astrologer can say about you. As one person said about their astrologer, his wife said, it's like he was sitting in your back pocket for the last 20 years. He knew everything about you. You know, like that. Then there's prashna. See, a horoscope gives a whole life. Everything is there. Everything about your whole life is there. But sometimes it might be that you don't know when you were born. That creates a problem. You might not have a clear idea of when you were born. You might not know when you're born at all. Then, but you have a problem. You know, can astrology still help you? Yes, by using prashna. Prashna, which is based upon the time the question was asked, which would be similar to if you use the I Ching, or if you use the tarot. It's also just based upon the time when it's asked, but this is more sophisticated. So prashna is from Sanskrit, you know, a word which means the question. It'll be a question. If you have a specific question, then prashna just zeroes in exactly on that subject, on that topic. It's a very good tool for strategic decisions. One time I was at the National Convention of the American Psychiatric Association, because one of my clients owned a psychiatric hospital, and he invited me there. It was just close to where I was living. He was from California, and I was lived close to Atlanta, where the convention was held. So I was there in a suit, and then they gave me a little name tag, right? So everybody thought I was a psychiatrist, and they tried to sell me something, Zoloft and, you know, Prozac, and so. This convention is simply big sales pitches. I thought I was going to see interesting things like, you know, about serial killers or something, but I found out that the two biggest problems in the psychiatric world are everybody is depressed and everybody has attention deficit disorder. That's the main things. And they said that in the near future, next 10 years or so, everybody's going to have dementia, like, as they get older. So everybody was trying to sell me different drugs. And I kept, you know, trying to explain that I wasn't a psychiatrist. And I tried to explain somehow that I was an astrologer. They thought that was a little interesting, but they couldn't quite relate to it. And and my client was, he was standing and doing whatever he was doing, but listening to me. Then finally, I came up with a good description of myself. I said that I was a strategic consultant. That's how I described myself. I was a strategic consultant. At that moment, he turned around and said, yes. Anything more than $10,000, I ask him first. Using prashna. Because when he first consulted me, he asked me a prashna, two, whether he should borrow $900,000 from the bank and whether he should go into business with his partner. I had said no to both of them. To one, he agreed. He didn't borrow the money. The other one, he didn't agree because he said, what does he know? I just, you know, this guy sounds okay. This partner looks okay. And he went into business with him, and the man ripped him off for tens of millions of dollars. So after seeing that, from that point on, he always asked me, you know, years and years and years, he always, before he made any major decision, he would always consult. Because it's for strategic planning. Should I go into partnership with this person? Should I go to this school? Should I move to this country? Should I marry this person? Should I buy this car? Should I buy this house? Anything which is going to cost you in time, in your money, in your emotions, any major strategic decision, prashna is the perfect tool, because it just zooms in exactly on that point. And because the time is known exactly, I keep my set within a nuclear clock, atomic clock, so it's always very accurate. And since it's focused on only one topic, then there's very high success rates. Whereas with other, you know, having to read a horoscope because it's covering everything imaginable about a person, there's more room for making error because you're covering so many topics. Obviously, you can make more mistakes, but if you're just covering one topic, then the scope for a much higher scope for success is there. So that's the perfect application. And also, you get the answers much quicker. Then comes Nimitta. Nimitta, though astrology is part of omens, when you're studying astrology, it becomes a subset. Because they're utilized together, especially in very elaborate systems of prashna. Omens are still used. Or which side of your nose the breath is coming, for example. You can tell the future just from, if you know which nostril your breath is coming from, then you can tell the future. Do you know that? The left nostril, the Ida and Pingala, if you study yoga, you know, Kundalini yoga, then Ida and Pingala Nadi. The Ida Nadi is ruled by the moon, and the Pingala Nadi is ruled by the sun. Right? So, that's why after you take your meals, you should lay on your left side. Because if you lay on your left side, then the opposite Nadi starts moving. If you just do this experiment later when you go home, if you lay on your left side, after a few moments, you'll notice that your left nostril, no air starts going through it. It'll just block. All the air will come out of your right nostril, which is ruled by the sun. So naturally, if it's the sun, which is a source of heat, that helps you with your digestion. It helps you digest your food. And after a few minutes, you just lay on your right side, you'll see the opposite happens. The right nostril blocks up, then the left nostril becomes flowing with energy, flowing with breath. You can control, you can start either nostril just by shifting sides. Try it. It works. So if somebody asks you a question, suppose they're sitting on your left side, they ask you a question, and then the air is blowing through your left nostril, then the answer is yes. If it's blowing from the other nostril, the answer is no. Very simple. It gets more sophisticated than that, but that's a very simple one. Just by knowing which side of your nose the air is coming, you can tell the future. You can give an answer. It gets more sophisticated, but that's a basic thing. Then another branch is called Muhurta. Muhurta is when you want to start something. Suppose you want to start a business, or you want to build a house, or you want to get married, or you want to start anything such that the end result, you want it to be good. So then, Muhurta is very useful because now you're using your free will. The others are telling what the reactions of your free will were. But Muhurta is when you're utilizing your free will. So it can help in achieving a positive result. But it's not the only thing. You know, it's useful, but it's not a guarantee that you'll have a positive result. For example, a farmer. It's useful, it's necessary to plant your crops at the right time. But it's not sufficient. Because if it doesn't rain, it didn't matter that you planted your crops at the right time. If there's, you know, a flood, it doesn't matter. You know, but it's necessary, but it's not sufficient. But if you don't plant your crops at the right time, forget it. It's going to be totally wrong. It's not going to work at all. But just because you did it at the right time, it's not a guarantee. But it definitely helps. Definitely helps. Because suppose your girlfriend or your boyfriend is the boyfriend from hell, and you choose, then you want to get married to them. Just because you choose the right time doesn't mean it's going to work out. But if they are a good person and you choose the right time, then it makes it better. It's like if you have good seeds, if everything else, it's a positive factor. But it's not a guarantee that if everything else is wrong, just by choosing the right time is somehow going to magically make it right. That would be wrong idea. Another thing I should mention about the difference between Prashna and Jataka is that Jataka, the natal chart, is based upon the time you were born, and therefore, you know, suppose you're 30 years old, that means in that 30 years you've had time to utilize your free will, because you always have free will. We'll get into it more tomorrow. Fate, free will, and the law of karma. You always have free will. Actually, I think I'll stop now and take questions. We'll leave something for tomorrow. Do we have any questions so far? A question over here. Yes?
I've been studying palmistry for many years.
Yeah.
And I gave up studying it because I found that very rarely can you change anything. And I'm just wondering, what's the point of studying something, or what's the point of doing something if you can't change anything?
If you can't change anything.
Yeah, you, basically, everyone has a karma, whatever it is, and after a while, they can't change anything.
Well, we're going to discuss karma tomorrow, so I don't want to answer that question now. Can we have a different question? I mean, I'm going to go into in-depth discussion of fate, free will, and the law of karma tomorrow. So stay tuned. A cliffhanger. Come tomorrow. Because that's a very lengthy topic, and it's a very good question, which has... I'll answer that tomorrow. A different question, not on that topic. Yeah. Yes. Say again?
For example, through prayer, is it okay to ask for what you want, what you need?
Is it okay? Yes.
Sometimes you could, I don't know.
It's in the second canto of the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It explains that whether you have all material desires, whether you have no material desires, or whether you have the desire for liberation, in all circumstances you should approach God. So if you have desires, then you should ask God. Now, if he thinks you shouldn't get it, then he won't give it to you. But if you think first deserve and then desire, you know, because as Arjuna explained to Yudhisthira and Krishna in the Shabdaparva, that there are three principles for success. The first principle is concentration of mind. Concentrate your mind on the object. Then, persistent effort in trying to achieve that goal. And then comes the grace of God. If after you've done everything and he thinks it's okay, then you get it. If he doesn't think, you won't get it. But you have to do your part first. You have to do your part first. Then it's up to him. So because Krishna, he's very merciful, he won't grant you something which is not for your benefit. And if he does, that means he's cheating you. If he like that. Any other questions? Yes?
Thank you very much, Prabhupada, for a very enlightening and interesting class. Very interesting. The question I have is, you mentioned about astrology, where you can look at a chart and it's more or less you can see where the kind of the karma or the future of the person.
Yes.
If it is so, then what gives the motivation for somebody to do what they have? If it's already my karma, this is what I am going to be.
That was the same question he asked me. We'll answer that tomorrow.
Sorry. And it makes somebody complacent, doesn't it, Prabhu? It makes somebody complacent, not wanting to do anything, because that's going to happen.
No, because as I just explained to her, you have to do your part. You just can't be a slug. Even the lion, the king of the beasts in the forest, not that he just opens his mouth and the animals walk in. Right? He have to make some effort. You have to make some effort. So it's a combination of your effort. There's two philosophies. You're familiar with the Sri Sampradaya. So there's two philosophies there. One is called the cat philosophy. And the cat philosophy is that just as the mother cat picks up the kitten in its mouth, then we're just totally dependent upon God and we don't do anything. We just, you know, like cat, kitten, and like that, just hanging in there. Whatever God wants, that's what we do. And then there's the monkey philosophy. The monkey philosophy is, now, the baby monkey has to hang on to its mother for dear life, because the mother is jumping from one tree to the next tree, like that, you know. So the monkey has to, that means by your effort, then you will make advancement. But that's not our philosophy. Our philosophy is the philosophy of the man in the well. Now suppose you're walking in the fields, right? And this actually happens in India. I just read about it a few times in the last couple of years. There's one woman, she was working with her husband, then she went home, and he went home, and she wasn't there. Where did she go? What happened to her? Everybody's looking. She'd been walking in the fields, and there was a blind well covered with grass. She fell in it, fortunately. You know, and she was there, down there. She had fallen like 40 feet. There's no way she was going to get out of it. She would have died. So when you're stuck in the well, you're stuck. You're really in trouble. If nobody comes, you're dead. Yeah, you're dead. So when they come, by their mercy, they lower a rope, right? But you have to grab the rope. So it's a combination of the mercy of God and your effort. Because if Krishna just drops the rope down, you don't do anything, nothing's going to happen. But you have to recognize the mercy, you have to take that mercy, and then you have to do something. Or, like there's one joke, you know. This Jewish fellow, he was complaining that, you know, he always wanted to win the lottery. But his neighbors were winning the lottery. Some of his neighbors had won the lottery. Other people had won the lottery. And, you know, I pray to God, he was saying, but you never let me win the lottery. Why is that? And God said, Moshe, meet me halfway. Buy a ticket. Even to win the lottery, you have to buy a ticket. So, we have to do our part, then God does His part. If we deserve, then we get. If we don't, we don't. That's where... But we have to do our part.
Yeah. He also said that everything around us is talking to us. I don't know about that, right? You said that everything...
If we understand, it's talking to... It is communicating with us. We have to have the eyes and ears to understand it. So it takes training. It takes training. If you go to my website, at shyamasundardas.com, there's one article called Ashtamangala Deva Prashna, which gives you an example of this kind of thing. Certain parts of India, they practice this system, only in Kerala, where they, where something is wrong in a temple, things are not going right. So they call in a panel of astrologers, and it's a multi-day function. And all kinds of amazing things which are beyond any mechanistic explanation take place. That's because they're very highly trained astrologers. Like, I give an example. I've been to several of them. So, what they'll do is they'll ask, usually some problem with the temple. So they'll ask somebody from the temple who doesn't know anything about astrology. He shows them a diagram of a horoscope. You take this stick on the ground, you draw the diagram of this chart. So then the man does it. Then the astrologer says, you notice he drew the north line first and he did it from right to left. That means something. It means such and such. And because part of the line is deeper than it, that also means something. Or then I remember I was at one of these things and instead of drawing a perfect square, he made it lopsided. Like a rhombus. So after it was drawn, the astrologer said, because some of it is extended this way and some of it is decreased this way. This means you have purchased some land on this side and you've sold some land on that side. 300 people in attendance said, yes, that's true. So everything, you know, or which way the one of the other astrologers said, the deity, in the original deity of this temple has been shifted 3 times. Everybody said, yes, it's true. How did you know? And because while they were setting up the prashna, somebody moved the deepa 3 times. The deepa signified the deity. It was moved 3 times, so therefore the deity was moved 3 times. Or which way the flame is bent. Is it moving? Is it bent to the west? Is it bent to the south? All have meaning. It's like, let's put it this way. It's a prearranged code. Like Morse code. So many dashes, so many dots means a certain letter. That's what Morse code is, right? So it's prearranged. So you arrange with God that this is what the meaning is going to be. If that's what happens, that's what the meaning is. So everybody, it's just like you were saying you prayed, right? So in the United Nations, or in everybody's praying in a different language, but God understands what all of them are saying.
But you're also acting out. The sign, the person who reads the sign, the person who acts out.
Well, the thing is, it's sort of like a pattern which has been understood that this is what the meaning is.
Yeah.
What the meaning is. It's been accepted. It's like, you know, if you know, somebody knocks on the door twice. You know, like when I come home, my wife, so that she knows it's me, I have to ring the doorbell twice. That means it's me. Not because everybody else only ring the doorbell once. So she knows that's going to be me who's in. So we made a prearranged system.
But how about prearranged that's not?
Well, these systems are coming directly from, like everybody knows who Garga Muni is, Garga Rishi. You know who Garga Rishi is, right? Garga Rishi is the one who did the horoscope of Krishna and Balaram. Right? So how did he become who he was? He became who he was because all the preliminary, all the great astrologers, all the eminent astrologers were all rishis. So Garga Rishi didn't study astrology. Explained in the Vishnu Purana. He was a great devotee of Shankarshan. And Shankarshan was very pleased with him. So then he gave him the ability to understand the mysteries of the planets. It was a siddhi. He developed a siddhi, a perfection, a mystic perfection, how to understand these things. Because Krishna has set up the code. He's the one. And then he inspires the rishi what the meaning of it is. That's how it's done. And given that, you know, everything comes from Krishna. Janmadhyaya Asyataha. Everything originates from God. For the science of astrology also originates from him. Previously, it was not so much used in previous yugas, like in Dwarpa Yuga, in Treta Yuga, or Satya Yuga, because people didn't need it. They had their antardrishti. Just by inner vision, they could see what was happening. But as, you know, as things become more degraded, they need more tools. More tools are required. If you read in the Ramayana, there's a small mention of astrology. They're reading twitching of the body, all these different things, but not so much planetary things. When they choose an auspicious time, they'll use that. Otherwise, if they wanted to see, like some rishi would just look into his heart and he could see everything that was happening. But then you get into Mahabharata, then it becomes more mention. Kala Vidya, the science of time. These things are there.
Yeah. We should consider astrology as a guide for our material life, while Bhagavad Gita is a guide to our spiritual life. Having said that, however, we could alter our material life by the blessings of God, as mentioned in Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, shloka 10 to 12, wherein we could we can foster the gods, and the gods would bestow all this unasked for, as prescribed.
What is the point you're trying to make?
The point is that astrology is only a guide, I think so.
As opposed to?
For a material life.
No. It can be used for anything. First of all, you do not need astrology to become Krishna conscious. You don't need it. It's like you don't need a doctor to become Krishna conscious. You don't need a car mechanic to become. But you might find that if you're sick, that doctors are useful. Right? But you don't need a doctor to become Krishna conscious. You don't need an astrologer to become Krishna conscious. But doctors and astrologers and dentists, they're useful. And specifically, astrology can be utilized for spiritual things as well. It just doesn't speak about material things. If you're a materialist, that's what it'll speak about. But if you're asking, inquiring about, because there is a spiritual factor. I mean, otherwise, how Gargamuni could tell who Krishna was and what he was going to do? How the Sarvagya, when Lord Chaitanya went to the Sarvagya could tell that he was all his different avatars. It just describes things. So if you're inquiring about spiritual things, it'll tell you about spiritual things. But if your interest is material, then that's most people. That's what their interest is, unfortunately. It depends upon two things: who the astrologer is, and who the client is. If the astrologer is, not well trained, or if he's just has not from a spiritual perspective, that's what you're going to get. And also, if the client's only got material interest, then that's what they're going to hear. But the purpose of astrology is a Veda Anga. It's the eye of the Veda. So the purpose, what is the purpose of the Vedas?
To know the Supreme Person.
To know Krishna. Veda is just Sarvasya Chaham Hrede Sandavishta Matasmitir Ginama Ponamcha. Vedasya Sabam Aham Eva Vedya Vedanta Krit Veda Vid Eva Cha. By all the Vedas am I to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of the Vedanta and the knower of the Veda. So it has the same purpose as the Veda. But the Veda can also be used for material things, depending upon the seeker. But most people, when they come to an astrologer, it gets kind of boring. They want to know about their money, about their love life, about their children, about their job, about their education, about their house. It gets a little tiresome after a while. It gets a little tiresome.
People
want to become an astrologer, they should know what the other side is of what it's like to be an astrologer. First of all, you're going to get the same questions and just different flavors of the same thing, and then you also have to be prepared to hear a lot of tragedy, a lot of very unfortunate things, very tragic stuff, terrible things. You have to be prepared to hear those kind of things, which I didn't think of. Nobody ever told me, but it's to hear a lot of terrible things. Ghastly stuff. Murders, horrible accidents, misfortunes, like that. You get to hear that kind of stuff. It makes you become very discouraged about material life, because you see, it's like a doctor. They have, in the emergency room, they see what the ultimate realities of material life are like. They see all the blood and the gore. This is what life is really about. It's a world of death. So I don't have to see blood everywhere, but I hear the after effects. People don't come to you. They only come to you when they have problems. And they have some very serious problems. One person wrote me a letter. My brother was in a car wreck 2 years ago. He's a vegetable. His wife was killed, and they have a 3-year-old child. What should I do? His brother's a vegetable. The mother's dead, and there's a baby. Help me. You get that day after day, week after week. So you get an idea how what a mess this world is, what a terrible place it is. Any other questions? Yes?
I just want to ask you about when you said about good omens and bad omens.
Say again?
When you were talking about good omens and bad omens.
Yes.
I see omens, but I don't know how to interpret them.
It's also a little difficult sometimes to interpret omens. because they can be... I'll give you an example of a difficult omen. One time this astrologer, with all his students, they were discussing certain topics. And then a man came into the room with a big problem. He was saying how his wife had just left him, and you know what's going to happen? You know, the family. His wife has disappeared. She's gone. You know, and at that moment, the astrologer's wife came into the room, and she's complaining how she was pulling water out of the well with a bucket, and the rope broke, and the bucket fell in. And can some of his students come and help him get the bucket out of the well? So the astrologer, ignoring his wife, said to his students, "Okay, what is the meaning of this omen?" It says he's telling this story. My wife came in. What's the meaning of the omen? That the rope broke, the bucket fell, you know, like that. So all the students, it's an omen, right? So they all of us said, well, because the rope broke, it means the relationship is finished. It's over. Except one of his students, he said, no, that's not what it means. Because the bucket was going away from the well, then it fell back in, it means she'll come back. So the astrologer said, yes, that is the correct meaning. So it's not always so easy. It requires training, you know, experience of what it means, you know. So it's, and there are, like everything else, it comes with practice. It comes with, or another way of saying it, it takes a lot of hard work to make it look that easy. To make it look easy. That it means a lot of hard work went into making it look that easy. Yes?
Have you ever been grossly wrong?
grossly wrong? Probably. astrology is perfect. Astrologers are not. Like everybody else, we make mistakes. But somehow, people think that astrologers have to be perfect. You know, everybody else is allowed to make mistakes except astrologers. Why is that? You know. Of course, that we make mistakes. But hopefully, you know, as with practice, you get fewer mistakes. Getting back to this doctor, the psychiatrist, he was often consulting me. One time I was wrong. So I offered him a refund. So he told me, he says, Sham, your record, he said, what did he say? He says, your success rate is much higher than than us doctors. If I had to give a refund every time I was wrong, I'd be out of business. That's what he's a doctor. So what is their success rate? You know, people make mistakes. It's just Krishna explains in the Gita. There's in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's two kinds of living entities: those who are perfect and those who are imperfect. In the spiritual world, everybody is perfect. Material world, everybody is imperfect. And above these two, there is the Purushottamam, Krishna. So we make mistakes, like everybody else. But it doesn't stop us from, you know, just like a child when he begins to walk, he falls down. Now if he said, oh, I made a mistake, I'm going to stop walking now, I'm not going to try walking anymore. You know, that's not going to be very... You know, you have to keep trying, to keep working. So hopefully our mistakes are lower than... All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. See you tomorrow, when you can ask about fate and free will and the law of karma.